Hello and welcome to another episode of Starside Chat. I'm one of your hosts, Zach, and joining me as always is Aaron.
Hello.
And we have a little indie games showcase to talk about this week, but we've watched the first couple episodes of that new Fallout show on Amazon, so we're gonna talk about that as well. Pretty excited to get into that. I don't know about you, but...
Yeah, I think it's a... spoiler alert, but I think it's a really good adaptation.
I was gonna say, I mean, who knows what happens in the rest of the episode? I mean, people who've watched it, but so far, I'm liking it, which is good, so... But speaking of adaptations, let's kick it off with Dredge. There's going to be a live-action film adaptation of the game Dredge. Which,
what do you think of this?
I'm curious how they will handle it, because I feel like half the game is the art style itself. Mm. And I wonder how they will do that. Like, I mean, it's going to be live-action, so supposedly the... like art style of it is not going to play a factor in it, but
the story is, I think, a good one to adapt because it, I think there's not so much going on. They can take some artistic liberties. All it really is like, you know, what is it? I always forget how you refer to that type of cosmic horror.
Yeah, I was just trying to think of that too. What is the term?
It's the name of the author,
Lovecraft.
Yeah, Lovecraftian. I don't know. I feel I'm wondering how big budget this will be. I feel like whenever something is, because I mean, you got to imagine they're going to have to build a boat, and it's not going to be one of those like things where a small team got the license for this and they're going to like make a little movie about this. I think the budget would have to be, I mean, it's going to be shot on the water primarily, I would imagine. So. I don't know.
They've got to find like a nice little archipelago area to like shoot this in. But
if they get the vibe right, it could be really good.
Yeah, it is another one that's like all about the vibe. Yeah. And yeah, there is enough there story wise that like they could like play around with it and do some interesting things. But they're not like, I don't know. They don't have to, you know, word for word follow a script because it's not like. So story heavy. That,
yeah, I don't,
like,
the story is not important in the game. I feel like it's more just like the atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean there is a story there, and it is interesting, but it's not like it is a little bit more about the atmosphere, and it is a little bit more about like gotta catch them all type of thing.
You have to catch them all.
You have to. They should use that. Oh wait, maybe it was used before. Never mind. But yeah, anyway, I like the game a lot, so I would be curious to watch this.
It's crazy how it keeps coming up. Like, it also had that crossover
with Dave the Diver. Yeah,
yeah, it popped up there as well.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they will do a Dredge 2, and maybe that's like in the works as well.
Well, let me ask you this: does it leave it open for a Dredge 2 at the end of the game?
I guess that's true. The ending, not to spoil it, but it is a little like apocalyptic. So I'm curious, but yeah, I don't know. They can always find a way to do it is the thing. If it does well enough and people want it, they will always find a way to do something else.
True.
Speaking of doing more things, Star Wars is still out there, still kicking. What do you think of this Star Wars Outlaws? Because they did reveal a release date this last week.
You know, I'll say this. If this was something, and maybe this is already confirmed, is this a Game Pass game?
I don't know that it is.
If this was on Game Pass, I would check this out. Because it would be easy to download. That's the reason I checked out the first... What was the
Jedi Fallen Order?
Yeah, Fallen Order. That was on Stadia, whatever they called their Stadia free games. And so I checked that out, and I had fun with it. I think I only played it for like 6 or 7 hours, but then I kind of bounced off of it. But I would play this maybe for 6 or 7 hours if it was interesting. I like the idea of running and gunning in this like semi-open zone world. But if it's not on Game Pass, I currently have not seen anything that has made me jump out of my seat to purchase it.
Yeah. So the release date is August 30th. But yeah, I don't really have any interest in this, to be honest. Star Wars is a little bit dead to me at this point. So like making another game where it's sort of similar to Cal Kestis, where the protagonist is just not interesting to me. But also like, what if there was a create a character? Like, what if they stopped trying to force characters and just like let you make your own? Do the Mass Effect thing where you could have like a character model as the default that you could put on the cover, and you could like promote the actor or have them go out on stage or whatever, but like create a character.
Not a bad idea.
If you could create your own person to be in a Star Wars game, I feel like
that's how it was with KOTOR, wasn't it? Wasn't KOTOR you could create your own person?
I'm pretty sure you could. And definitely in like the Old Republic, that MMO, I feel like you'd make your own character for that. But so yeah, that's out there. And then talk about this Destiny the Fallen Shape walkthrough we saw.
Okay, Zach, we used to have a segment on this podcast where we would talk about Destiny. Both of us have pretty much bounced off of it for good. However, their final like story DLC for their 10-year journey of Destiny is imminently releasing. It's maybe a couple months away, but they released this, like, they did a live stream where they have a 19-minute walkthrough of what's going on in the final shape. And the story seems crazy, but they also have just seem, it seems like they're throwing everything at the wall and just going to see what sticks. And it's kind of wild, the kind of the stuff they're doing. It seems like they're kind of breaking the game intentionally. The new subclass, I guess, is called Prismatic. And basically, I'm not exactly sure if they revealed exactly how it works, but it lets you mix and match all subclasses. I think pretty much how you want. Like you have two grenades at all times, and there are now two different meters where when you do light damage, it charges up, and then when you do dark damage, it charges up, and those mean different things. But when they both get charged up, you have like another kind of limit break kind of a thing, or ultimate ability. It seems wild to watch. And also they're adding these class items that are like exotic random rolls. Like you can get crazy class items that have like different exotic perks that you can mix and match. So they're basically, it's almost like cheats where you're able to enable all of these crazy things. And it feels like one of the things that one of the devs said in the live stream was like, we want to make it feel like you're breaking the game when you use this subclass, which seems cool. I don't think I'm going to check it out, but it just is wild that they're going for broke. It seems like, I don't really know what the next step past this is. Like, it seems like they're unlocking things that subsequent like content drops. Like, I don't know how they're going to balance for all this. They're making you like super powerful in a crazy way where you have all this customization. You can make all of these crazy builds that like feed on each other. So you're like constantly doing abilities and stuff. It seems like it really is like the ultimate final content drop, even though it's not, they supposedly are going to continue to support Destiny, but it's pretty wild. I have to say, I don't think I'm going to check it out, but if you're interested, if you played Destiny at all ever in the past, like, you know, 9 or 10 years, I would say check out this Final Shape dev walkthrough, because it's a little bit nostalgic, and it's also parts of it I couldn't even parse what was going on, because there's like so much stuff they've added to the game, and this new system just seems insane.
Yeah, that is like a good way to sort of entice players to come back if they haven't been back in the game for a while. Just be like, you know what, we've taken the training wheels off, we've removed all the limitations that we might have had in the past, and now you can basically do anything.
Yeah, it looks crazy. I'm excited I don't think they've revealed exactly what the the final like shape UI is? Looks like. Well, no. They definitely don't. They haven't revealed what the final shape is for sure, but they haven't revealed like what it looks like to build out these classes, like what the screen looks like when you're building your subclass. Mm. But I'm interested to see how complex that is. If it's like back from Destiny 1 days of like somewhat pretty complex, like just like a grid of circles that you're enabling, or if it, I mean, I don't even know, man. It's been so long since I've logged into Destiny. I don't know what it looks like these days.
You know what I wouldn't hate if they did? They won't do this because it would take too much time and resources, but if they just were like, you know what, for nostalgia's sake, we know you guys want it. Here's Destiny 1, sort of like World of Warcraft Classic Edition style.
I would love
style.
It. But, I would check that out for sure.
But what if they also a little bit like removed the, oh, you must play it online and we must keep the servers active or whatever. They just like gave you a playable version that you could just go back to whenever you wanted and you didn't have to rely on, oh, my fire team's not ready or whatever.
That's interesting. Like whenever you would load into a strike, it would just be bots? That would help,
yeah,
that would help you?
Even if it was just that, you know, just like make it playable. Like, ultimately offline, the dream, right?
I'm into that.
Like,
I think that's a really cool idea.
Make a preserved version of the game that you can still play regardless. But that's the dream. It probably won't happen. It is a game that's, like, you know, fated to eventually cease to exist, you know?
Well, they're gearing up for their marathon is the next thing they're going to start supporting. So who knows when that's going to start? I don't think we have a release date or anything for that, but they're definitely, I feel like, especially with this DLC kind of pulling out all the stops, I feel like they're truly shifting gears and going on to whatever that marathon game is going to be.
Yeah, it's just sort of a sad thing to think about that one of these days, this game that like we've put hundreds of hours into and are so nostalgic for, it will just like, there will not be a version that you can play anymore.
It is crazy. Yeah, I wonder, I mean, sometimes fans will, before World of Warcraft Classic, there were fans who had their own bootleg World of Warcraft servers that people could play on, but it was not like legal. I wonder if that'll ever happen for Destiny 1, where someone will get a hold of like the source code or whatever and load up a fan server that you can connect into.
Yeah, because I do, like, every now and then, like, watching some of this footage from Destiny, it'll make me nostalgic, even for, like, the Destiny 2 days. Like, there were times where I would get back into it, and, like, I just remember loading up and being like, okay, this is, like, a tough mission that is just, like, part of this new story thing they're doing. Let me, you know, I'll get a bow and I'll get like this other gun and I'll have like a good balance of like weapons for like range stuff, but also like taking out, you know, armored enemies or whatever. And then like going through the content and like feeling really good when you, you know, successfully complete it and you like get your powerful drops and stuff like that. And like, just, I don't know if they could somehow recapture that in a way that is like playable offline and doesn't require, you know, them to keep maintain the servers, so that like when I'm nostalgic for Destiny in like 5-10 years from now and I just like want to spend a weekend just like re-engaging with that, like if they could somehow make that possible. But I don't think it will be, unfortunately.
Time will tell.
Speaking of time will tell with whether these games are going to be good or not, there was a little showcase, a little indie showcase, the Triple I Initiative, which I had never heard of before. This might be a
newly created.
Newly created. And there was a lot of cool stuff in here. The first one, which I had no like idea of that it was going to happen, was Slay the Spire 2. I don't know if you caught a trailer for this or not. But it
no,
is gonna...
this one I did not check out because I don't really engage with card games that much or things with card systems.
Yeah, so this is coming in early access next year, I think. But yeah, a huge game. People loved Slay the Spire 1, and it like, what is the word I'm looking for? Inspired like so many other indie games that sort of followed, such that like I have played Slay the Spire 1, but like not a ton of it because I was like late to the party on it. And I feel like I've played so many other Slay the Spire likes that it was a little bit weird to go back to the thing that inspired it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm very interested to see how they take like everything that sort of followed and, you know, make a sequel to that game. But what about Risk of Rain 2? Have you played any of Risk of Rain?
Yeah, I love Risk of Rain 2. Me and two of my friends played a bunch of it over like the course of 2 weekends a couple years ago. And I think I unlocked all of the currently available characters, but since then I think they've added a couple. But it's a great game to just chill out. It's a great game to chill out and just like chat with your friends, because you don't super have to be paying attention to what's going on. You sort of a little bit have to be working together. I never played the original Risk of Rain, the 2D one, but the 3D one I had a lot of fun with.
Yeah, so I have not played these, but the trailer they showed during this showcase was for the Devotion update, which is going to add a new stage and new artifacts. And I don't know if this is new or not, but it seemed like they were adding the prisoner from Dead Cells as like a playable character.
I think that is new, yeah.
So that's kind of cool. What else did I put in here? I'm not going to necessarily go through everything, but I put down some highlights like that.
Shadows of Doubt is something I'm interested in.
So that's going to come to console on PS5 and Xbox Series X this year.
It's a free update called the Sharpshooter Assassin update. And I'm very interested in it.
Am I wrong in thinking that it's not on console currently?
No, it's not. No.
Okay.
I've watched people play this a lot. I've never actually started playing it myself, but it is fun to watch people play it because it's all procedurally generated. So it's basically just like, you know, mystery solving. You're a detective. And I think this is going to add a lot of cool stuff, this free update. But I'm very excited for this to come to console. I think I might play it on console as opposed to PC. And I'll get to do it this year.
Yeah, I wonder if it'll come to Game Pass, because it seems like it would be a great choice for Game Pass. But and then they showed Contra DLC coming to Vampire Survivors.
This is very funny, I think.
Yeah, because it wasn't Castlevania DLC.
Yeah, because Konami owns both Contra and Castlevania, and they were just like, "Well, no, we're doing Contra."
Well, but I mean, Castlevania DLC seems to be coming to every other game.
That's true.
Weirdly enough, except the one that was heavily inspired by Castlevania.
The one that used assets from it.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, this is interesting. They're using weapons and in like a different way than what you're used to in Vampire Survivors.
Yeah, I saw one. I mean, they've added so much stuff to Vampire Survivor, but I saw one Vampire Survivor level in this trailer that was like you're on a road basically racing against things as you're doing all this stuff. I don't know if that already existed in Vampire Survivor, if it's a thing they're adding from Contra, but it looks cool. I think we both played Vampire Survivor right when it came out, and since then they've added like a crazy amount of content to it. Like they just kept adding stuff, so I'm sure it's like a whole new game if I was to log back into it.
Yeah, I jumped in and played a bunch more of it like a few months ago and really enjoyed it again and like unlocked a lot more stuff than I had previously. And so that was cool to see. And yeah, if they just like keep adding more stuff to it. Also, like on a side note, I Am 8-Bit is like releasing the soundtrack to Vampire Survivors on vinyl.
Well,
I was a little bit tempted by that, but I'm like,
didn't they also say that they're making a show or a movie out of Vampire Survivors?
Oh, yeah, I vaguely remember something about that.
It's blowing up.
It is blowing up in a big way. Also, like, weirdly, Castlevania is blowing up in a big way, except without any new games to speak of. Like, isn't there, like, a Netflix TV show? And then there's, like, a DLC for Castlevania being added to everything, but they still have not
made a new
game.
Yeah, people like that Netflix cartoon. They say it's really good.
Yeah, and, like, the Castlevania DLC added to Dead Cells was awesome. But no new games, no new Castlevania games.
Hmm.
And then did you see the Hyperlight Breaker footage they showed?
I think I want to check this out when it comes to early access in the summertime. I have a lot of nostalgia for, I've talked about it on the podcast, but I love Hyperlight Drifter.
Yeah.
And this seems pretty fun. I love the art style. I think both of us kind of jumped off, bounced off of that game they did a couple years ago. What was that called? The one where you're on the hoverboard and you had to kill those big beasts.
Yeah, what was that called? It was like, it was almost like it was on rails because you're like kind of constantly moving.
Yeah. But I think this one will like solve the problems I had with that 3D transition.
Yeah.
From 2D to 3D. And I think I am into this. It's kind of weird. I was not expecting it to be procedurally generated when they came out with that, saying it was going to be kind of a roguelike. That a little bit was like, I don't know if I want to do this. But the trailers make it seem fun. And if it's cheap, if it's like not a full price game, which I don't think it will be, I could definitely see myself. Especially, I mean, if it's on Game Pass, I'm definitely going to play it.
Yeah. They also showed Streets of Rogue 2, which I think looked way cooler than I was imagining.
Yeah, those look super cool.
So I don't know. I might check that out when it comes out. I think they didn't give like a release date or window. They were just like, hey, wishlist this on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
And then that 33 Immortals game seems weird and interesting to me.
I don't know what this is.
This is that game where I feel like it's multiplayer, maybe. There's going to be like a closed beta for it. It's like co-op action roguelike, but like 33 people can play together.
I kind of remember this. Yeah. It's
supposed to be coming to PC in like mid-May. I kind of don't understand it just looking at it, but it seems like an interesting concept. It almost looks a little Hades-like, but you're going to be playing co-op with 33 people.
Interesting.
So I maybe will watch this and see how it is, but and then there was that mouse game, which looks like, you know, public domain Mickey Mouse 1930s era cartoons, but it's a first person shooter.
It's coming together. I feel like the first trailer they released for it was a little premature because it was all just like gray box type of stuff where they sort of had the UI figured out, but and some of the enemies, but the setting was not fully realized. But now it seems like it's getting way closer to release. And it looks cool. I like it. I like the art style.
Yeah, if you liked that, what was that Cuphead game? If you like that, but you are like, hey, what if this was
big
more of a Cuphead shooter?
Cuphead vibes, yeah.
Yeah. And then V Rising showed that they are going to have a Castlevania DLC. So, you know, more Castlevania stuff in other games. But the big reveal at the end of this was the Rogue Prince of Persia. This is from like a spinoff team from the Dead Cells team. So like the Dead Cells team, I think they, from what I heard, they like split off into two different groups, and one of them was like, you know, maintaining Dead Cells, and the other was like working on new stuff. And so one of the spinoff teams made this, it's kind of a weird art style, but it looks like it might be kind of good, especially given that there was a, you know, a Prince of Persia game that came out earlier this year that was really good. From what I hear, they were like made in isolation. So it wasn't like they were, maybe they communicated a little bit, so they were not like stepping on each other's toes, but like it's another sort of side scrolling Metroidvania, like, you know, Prince of Persia game. But I thought this was one of the highlights from the show.
It's interesting. Yeah, you really liked that Prince of Persia that came out this year, right?
Yeah, that was I thought it was great. I really liked that game. I don't know if I love the art style of this, but I mean, it's a Dead Cells follow-up, and it's Prince of Persia, and it's, you know, it is roguelike, which I don't necessarily love, but they did so many interesting things like sort of post-launch with Dead Cells that I'm very curious what this game will be like.
I wanted to shout out one more game from this showcase. What the Car?
Oh, yeah. I think this is like an Apple Arcade game that is just now going to come to like other platforms.
Did it already exist? Because I loved What the Golf. I played that on Switch a couple of years ago and had a really good time with it.
Now, that surprises me, because golf does not seem like your thing. But.
Well, I mean, you should. It's kind of good to play it without even knowing what's going to happen, but I would highly recommend What the Golf if you have a couple hours. I mean, it's not a super long game, but it consistently like every single level was like new and interesting and fun, and some of them made me laugh. Like, they're just so inventive, and this is, I think, gonna step it up even more. So I'm super excited for the sequel that if it was already around, that's very surprising to me.
I guess it would maybe lend itself
to a touchscreen, but
I might be wrong, but I was pretty sure it was an Apple Arcade game that is just now.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, I kind of remember that from somewhere. I think they also did a VR thing called What the Something Else, but
What the VR?
What the VR? I'm very excited for this. This was not on my radar at all. I'm gonna check it out.
So that's coming to Steam on September 5th.
Yeah, I probably will wait until it comes out into like Switch or Xbox to check it out, so I can play it on a TV. But
I think there is a demo available as well if you want to check it out. But
very exciting.
But I missed this. So Fallout 4 is like their next gen upgrade. There was like recent news about that?
Yeah, right. Just in time for the show coming out. I actually don't know if it's live right now, or I should look this up. Hold on. It's a free update. Is it happening right now? I think it's happening right now.
Oh, really? So, like, I could jump in right now on...
I think you could upgrade your... If you're playing on PlayStation 5 or Xbox Series X or S, it will download. You can experience the game at 60 FPS with higher resolutions. Available now, I think.
I should dig out my old PS4 copy of Fallout 4 then.
But yeah, it's kind of like a thing to celebrate the show. Before we get to the show, though, I was looking at all these indie trailers earlier this week, just kind of clicking around, and one got recommended to me that I guess I never watched, but we talked about on the podcast. I watched the trailer for Grime 2.
Oh, yeah.
It's very slimy.
Is it? It's been a long time since I watched the trailer, like the announcement trailer for that. But
Grime 1 famously was very rocky. Everything was about rocks or whatever. You played more of it than I did, obviously. But Grime 2 seems like, what if all the rocks were just little slimy worms?
That's interesting.
Which,
yeah,
I don't know how I feel about.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit like more grotesque to look at than some other Metroidvanias, but I just like really liked the sort of rocky nature of the first one, and I liked the weapons and the combat in that game, and like a really satisfying like parry system, which I don't normally, I'm not normally like, oh yeah, give me a good parry, but like in this game, like I feel like they were generous enough with the window on it that it like felt really good to sort of be able to pull off. And like it ties into the game and a little bit the story of like you're using the parry to sort of absorb enemies, and then you can like steal traits from them after you've absorbed so many of them. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know, there's just like, it was I thought a really cool combat system, and they kept like adding new content to it. Like, I would imagine that's one of those games that if I went back to it today, it would be like a really different experience. Than
they had the definitive
when I initially
edition
played
that
it.
Came out.
Yeah, but they added, supposedly there was like a really expansive new game plus to it. But even before you get to that, they added like a new area, and there were like new bosses, like mini bosses thrown in different areas, and like some of the areas that, you know, were in the game previously had like new different smaller areas that you could go into and like find different enemies, and there were new weapons added and stuff like that. So I feel like there's a bunch more to that game that I have not even seen, because I beat it, you know, before all these big additions started getting added. So do we want to get into Fallout? Actually, before we launch into our discussion on Fallout, like, this Fallout 4 next gen upgrade is like a really good, like, Fallout's back in the zeitgeist here, play some Fallout. But also, like, on my recent trip that I took, and I was like flying, I ended up playing, returning to Fallout Shelter.
Oh, really?
Which has been a long time since I played that, but I started a new vault in Fallout Shelter, and so I was like kind of dipping my toes back into that.
How are you playing it on Steam Deck or
No, just playing it on Android. And oh, nice. You can like set your vault to be like a cloud save so that you can access it on other devices. But
very cool.
But yeah, it's, I don't know. It's just kind of fun to be in that world and to have, you know, that art style and the, all the little sort of intricate details of like the Fallout universe and everything, which, you know, bridging into the TV show now, like it starts out and you're spending time in the vault. And I feel like they did a really good job of like adapting what we know and think of when it comes to like vault life in the Fallout universe.
I agree.
And so, yeah, I guess what are your high level thoughts so far in the first couple episodes?
I think they're nailing the soundtrack. You and I both watched it.
Straight up just using songs that we know from the games, for sure.
I feel like so much of the time when things are adapted, they're like, well, we got to do our own thing. But they have just been like, no, we're doing, like, all of the props have been really on point and all of the sound, like, they've been using all of the, like, sound effects and, like, song cues. We both ended at the end of season, or I'm sorry, at the end of episode 2. That's where we stopped last night. And that's where they play the iconic "I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire." But I'm liking it. I think it's very like dark and dismal.
Well, it's that Fallout thing where you have this like counterpoint of like happy-go-lucky 30s and 40s like big band music set against the, you know, the backdrop of this like destroyed world, and it's like everything is kind of you know, dead and grimy and gross, and like you're seeing pretty horrific things, but you know, it's also like kind of happy-go-lucky in its tone.
It is,
a little bit.
It's crazy because, like, especially there was a scene where she gets out of the vault and she's walking around the beach, and she walks into a house and there's like a family of skeletons. And like a baby skeleton in a high chair. And I was like, man, this is really intense. But then I thought about it. I was like, man, if this was the game, I would be running all around this place. All these skeletons would be flying around. I would be ripping stuff out of the walls. I would just be like running headfirst into that baby in a high chair, knocking it over, not really thinking about it. But because it's live action, you get to like see like, oh, man, this is actually kind of horrific.
Yeah, and I thought the same when it came to like the gore, because like, when you watch the movie and it's like done in live action, it like hits you on a different level.
Yeah.
Like in the games, like it's very true to the games because the games are all about gore. There's even like a perk where when you shoot somebody and kill them, they basically explode into blood and like their limbs and, you know, their head goes everywhere, and it's just like. In the game, that's like animated and sort of goofy, and you don't really think too much about it. And you're like, oh, that's kind of funny. But in the show, when they do stuff like that, you're like, oh my gosh, this is like horrifying. But yeah, so they nail it on the tone and like the sort of adding some of that stuff. And I did like at the very beginning, it does feel like the start of, you know, a Fallout game where. Not just because she's in the vault, but like she sort of runs down through her special stats basically when she's talking to that sort of council. And she also like starts out, you basically don't have a weapon at the start. And then you start off with something like a knife or something like that. So she had that. And then cool to see them use like stim packs. Like she goes into the bathroom at one point and pulls a med kit off the wall and grabs a stim pack out of it.
It looks exactly like a stim pack in the game.
Yeah, so they're really nailing all those like intricate details that you expect, and I'm sure there's like a ton of little Easter eggs that if you like frame by frame some of the stuff you'd see. Like there was at one point she's in this town talking to somebody, and I saw on the counter it was either a skill book or like a Grognak the Barbarian comic, and I was like, ooh, yeah, they got that too. But yeah, they're also like using the Fallout drugs, which is pretty common.
Yeah.
I think in the first episode, somebody uses what I thought was maybe Jet.
Yeah, I think
so too.
Which
is pretty common. But yeah, they made some good use of the Fallout assets for sure. And I thought, I listened to part of the Min-Max discussion about it, and I thought that Kyle Hilliard guy made a good observation that it's like, they're not necessarily adapting like any particular story from the games. They're more adapting the world and the universe. Yeah. And from that standpoint, they're doing a really good job with that, at least so far. And I did like that the junk jet gun appeared.
Yeah, that was like, cool too. Yeah,
where they were shooting like they killed somebody by shooting a baby doll into them, basically. And there's like a little baby doll hand sticking out of his chest, which was funny. But yeah, she also gets like a walkout moment at the beginning where like it,
yeah,
the screen gets all bright and sort of fades down so you can see what you're looking at. So I do have questions though. And sure, this is probably going to be answered as we continue to watch the show. But did it seem strange that Kyle MacLachlan like knew the Raider leader, but like didn't say anything about it? And then he gets kidnapped and a bunch of people get brutally murdered.
It's also interesting because he was part of the program where he's like from another vault and he came to this vault to breed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he also is the overseer somehow, which seems weird to me. Like he's from another vault. It's crazy that he would be elected as overseer. Or even, are they even elected? I thought that was like a, I forget how that works.
You're like appointed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't remember how that works, how you become overseer. But it didn't strike me as that odd that like, you know, over time, if you're just like a good community member, that maybe eventually you would become the overseer. But yeah, I'm sure there's like a line of succession there. But
I also and this is probably a symptom of me not really beating any Fallout game ever. I played 3 New Vegas and 4, and I got the farthest in New Vegas, but I don't super remember. I know a lot about the Brotherhood of Steel, but I don't super remember the Enclave. All I know about them is they have a different set of power armor, really.
Yeah, so they're a big deal in Fallout 3. It's like you basically get to choose between siding with the Brotherhood of Steel and the Enclave.
What's their deal
in that game? I think they're just like, you know, sort of old-timey America, you know, let's gung-ho become like New America or whatever. There's like, I forget his name, but it's President somebody of the Enclave that you're like dealing with in Fallout 3. And the Brotherhood of Steel is obviously, they're kind of a weird deal too, because their whole thing is just like finding technology and like trying to accumulate as much of that as they can. But they also have this like militaristic sort of culture about them as well. But they're, so I don't really know what to make of them either. But yeah, I don't remember the Enclave as well as I should. I should look them up a little bit and try to recollect some of like how all of that stuff goes down in Fallout 3. Because I don't remember them being much of a thing in New Vegas or Fallout 4.
I don't think they were a thing at all in New Vegas, because I don't remember. That's the one I played the most of, and I don't remember ever running into. There's definitely some Brotherhood of Steel stuff that happens. But I played a lot of Fallout 4, but I didn't really engage with the main story. I sort of just wandered around, you know, liberating settlements as you do in Boston. But yeah. All I really know about them is that they are, I mean, they're not the Institute, right?
No, those are different things.
That's a different thing.
The Enclave is more like, I guess they want to take over and like have like sort of reinstitute some like vague form of like the old America, you know, government leadership type of thing. And then they just have like Enclave style power armor that they're using as their like military or whatever. But I remember in Fallout 3, I think I did side with the Brotherhood of Steel because I thought the Enclave seemed evil for some reason. And I don't remember why, because it's been too many years since I played that game. But yeah, I'm not far enough in the show to say like what's going on there, but isn't Walton Goggins' character like somehow tied to the Enclave?
Oh, interesting. I don't know.
Did he? Because I feel like he said something about the Enclave, or maybe it was the people that were going after him for some reason. They said something about the Enclave. The Enclave is mentioned within the first two episodes, but I don't remember why.
Well, because the guy from Lost works for the Enclave.
Which is the guy from Lost?
The guy who gets his foot blown off.
Oh, that guy. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. So, that's a weird situation as well. I kind of don't know what to make of that. I was watching it with my brother, and he was super confused as to how Walton Goggins' character could, like, stab a dog to more or less kill it or, you know, disable it, and then just hit it with a stim pack, and it's, like, good to go, but also, like, we're now best friends.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy that he harmed it, but now it likes him.
Yeah.
And glad the other that it's not thing, dead, though.
The other thing that I thought was weird was, like, the Brotherhood of Steel character that we're following. He seems like an idiot. I'm not gonna
lie. He also seems bad. Like, I got the sense pretty definitively that he was the one that sabotaged that boot, right?
Yeah, well, it was unclear. They make it sound like it was one of the other people that did it, and they were just trying to decide whether he did it. But he didn't, like, definitively, like, shoot that down as, like, no, I did. I definitely
he looked super guilty. And if, like, he did do that, that's like not a great introduction to the character.
I think, well, because he talked to the other person that had the thing happen to him, and they were, like, looking at some of the other, like, Brotherhood of Steel people, and, like, yeah, they're pranking somebody or giving them a wedgie or whatever. And, like, I think it was one of them.
So that also was the thing that I think was maybe I am liking the writing of this show. However, the only part of it that I felt like came out of nowhere and just served to move the plot along was they're in the airship, him and the guy in the armor. And then the guy in the armor is just like, I'd like to land now. I want to shoot some stuff. And then the ship just leaves. Like, all that does is serve the purpose of they need to not be in the plane anymore because they have to have this interaction with the bear.
Yeah.
I feel like they could have had a much more eloquent way of doing that.
That did feel very clunky and obvious. Like, they're in this vertibird flying around, and supposedly it's going to take them somewhere, and just out of nowhere the guy's like, I need to shoot something. Yeah. And so they're just like, oh, all right, get out now, I guess. And they drop and down and immediately you're like, okay, well, there's nothing to shoot here, what are you going to do? And so they just walk around for a while until they eventually get attacked by a giant radiated bear, and then the knight is a complete pansy who just gets owned by the bear to conveniently kill him off so that this character can just, like, take the power armor, even though it's unclear how the guy died while in the power armor.
I don't know. They could have just been like, the guy in the power armor or even the pilot could have been like, hey, what's that? And, like, they, like, land the ship or whatever, and there's, like, you know, something that makes it seem like the guy had been there, like his coat or something. And then the Brotherhood of Steel guy could have been like, well, we got to go through this forest. The vertebrate can't go in the high trees, so we're going to walk the rest of the way. That would have taken, I think, as much time as...
You literally could have written one line in there to have justified... Yeah. Exiting the vertibird as opposed to...
It was just lazy, I think. Yeah. But that's the only part where I was kind of like, come on, guys.
I a little bit thought it was like they wanted to have, like, the showdown between Walton Goggins' character and the guy in the power armor. But then they needed, like, a convenient way to separate them because they couldn't kill either of those characters off. Mm. And, like, undoubtedly that's how that would have ended eventually. Yeah. And so they're like, what if the power armor suit could just fly? And he, like, doesn't know what he's doing, and so he flies away. And, like, that's not really how power armor works, but I guess you have to take a liberty to, like, separate these characters that you've brought together and are not ready to kill one of them off yet.
Yeah.
Also, the guy, I don't remember what his name is. He looks like a young Denzel Washington, such that I searched it, and it's a common search, such that somebody wrote an article to dispel any rumors that there is a relation between the two of them. So that happened. But also, so this guy, he is, like, so, you know, what's the word? Ambitious towards like finding success as a member of the Brotherhood of Steel that he's willing to like kill or let other members of the Brotherhood of Steel die, such that I think you're right. It is doing like a disservice to this character and making him seem more evil than likable.
He's the not like he's the least likable guy, because he also seems a little bit like a zealot, where he's like, no, like our mission is to make everything better, and I know what to do, and
yeah,
I'm gonna help. Like there was a scene, there's that scene where he gets in the power armor and then he like breaks up that fight, but then it is revealed that that fight was kind of it was a weird situation.
Yeah.
So he's like, he has this naivete that I feel like needs to get broken. But y'all, I mean, the vault dweller lady, Lucy, also has like naivete. So I wonder if they'll like synchronize in that and both be like super naive.
Well, yeah. And they definitely like, she kind of has this like starry eyed thing about him for no good reason. So I feel like that's setting up a romance that I don't know if they're going to earn yet, but. But yeah, the Brotherhood of Steel guy also like stupidly radios that like acting as Knight Titus, the guy that he let die. And yeah. It's just like, well, why would you say that? Like, I get that maybe, you know, he wants the power armor and he wants to try to complete the mission himself so that he can be like, hey, look, I did this. Promote me or whatever, you know. But what are they going to do when they find out that it wasn't Knight Titus and he was lying the whole time? Also, they sent another person to be his squire, and now he just has to maintain the ruse. And it's just like, this guy's an idiot. Also, yeah, I think you're right. He is like the least likable of the characters so far. So that doesn't
especially
help
if he
case.
Was the one that did that boot thing. Like, that's a real bummer to have one of your main characters be that like kind of cowardly and vindictive.
Well, and yeah, so I mean they. It's unclear whether he did that or not, but also he's just like letting the, you know, Knight Titus actually die when he could have saved him. But also on top of that, he like very nearly kills the squire that they send out to him. He has this moment where he has to like choose between, you know, killing him so he doesn't have to maintain this ruse anymore and he can just explore by himself, or letting him live. And I guess he does choose to let him live, but like, he also destroys the radio, and I feel like they're going to eventually catch on to that and be like, hey, something's up here. Let's send somebody. So I don't know. He's making a lot of really dumb choices such that it's like a little bit infuriating to watch him. But
shout out to that guy from Lost, Ben from Lost. I don't remember his real name, but that guy's great to watch. And I, you know, put some little circular glasses on that guy and I could watch him for days. He was a great part of that show. And I'm bummed he's dead now, but he had a great couple
episodes. I was
going to
say, spoilers for episode two. You don't get to watch him for long.
Yeah. Oh, man, it was the part I almost had to look away from was when they gave him that new leg. That was, like, pretty upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah, that was upsetting. I do like Walton Goggins' character. I'm curious where they go with that character. And if he is just a straight-up villain... that was another thing that Kyle Hilliard brought up that I thought was like a good way of putting it. He almost feels like the Man in Black from Westworld, like he's sort of fulfilling that role where you're not quite sure if he's a good guy or a bad guy, but he's definitely like gruff and sort of harsh in a harsh world. But I'm definitely curious to watch more. I'm going to try to get through as much, if not all of it, throughout this weekend, and maybe we'll have more to say about it next week.
Yeah. Did you finish up Shogun?
So I'm caught up to where the show is right now. I think there's still two more episodes.
Oh, I forgot it's weekly.
But yeah, before the season ends. And some crazy stuff is going down in that show. It's definitely like sort of the main Japanese character who's like the leader that you're kind of following I guess spoilers up to this point, skip ahead maybe, but he's like maintaining a ruse that he has to sort of maintain so that, you know, prying eyes don't catch on to what his actual plan is. And that involves him not being able to fill in the actual people he does trust in on the plan. And those people are a little bit like, you've gone off the rails. This is crazy. You can't do this, such that some of them, like one of them, commits seppuku and he has to just watch and let it happen because he can't, you know, let them all in on his ruse for fear of having it go sideways. So some people are sacrificed, unfortunately, to maintain this ruse. So yeah, but it's definitely interesting. I'm curious where it's going. Haven't read the books yet. I might listen to an audiobook version just to not have to read a gajillion pages, but we'll see. I'm liking that show a lot, though. That show's very good so far. Anything you've been playing, watching?
I can't remember if it's on Switch or Xbox, but I never played the sequel to Katamari Damacy. And We Love Katamari. It was like $6 on either the eShop or the Xbox store. So I bought it and I've been playing it and it's been a lot of fun. I don't know that the music is as good as the first game, but if you haven't played the first game, definitely check that out. Both this and that, they have, so We Love Katamari and Katamari Damacy have like current gen remakes of them called Reroll, like I Love Katamari Reroll. Or they might be from previous gen, but you can still play them on current gen. But they're nice. They're HD. It's a fun game to just roll around in. And the first game has an amazing soundtrack. And the second game has pretty good music. But it also incorporates a lot of interesting new ideas, which is cool. But that's pretty much all I've been playing. And I've just been watching that Fallout show.
I've made not as much progress as I would have liked in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Yeah. I think I might still be in chapter 10. But I have to say, like, we got to a point, or I got to a point through like the story beats where it eventually was like, okay, Cosmo Canyon's open to you now. Go. Ooh. There's all these side activities again. And I just was a little like, ugh, I don't want to do these again. Like, I've done all these open worldy activities like 5 times in different zones already. And the fact that it just like hit that and was like, okay, open zone time, go do some activities. I was just like, I don't want to do this right now. So I have not jumped back in, unfortunately, but I might just like start ignoring those now and just try to proceed with the main story. Cause
yeah,
I don't know, those open worldy activities are definitely repetitive, and it's one thing if you have like a giant map and it's like an open world game and you're like, here's a new zone I've entered into, I could go like find the tower and like activate it and open up this stuff. But when it's like, here's a story beat and something interesting's happening and you're like, okay, I want to see what the next story beat is, and it's like, open zone time, here's all these activities, don't you want to do them for a 5th time now? It's just like, no, this is not really doing it for me. So I don't know, I am super into the story and the characters and I want to see where it's going, but like some of those open zone activities are really starting to weigh me down. It doesn't feel great. But also, like, mini game wise, if I'm comparing this to like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, that game was so fun and engaging with all of its side content that like I could have just spent hours doing that stuff and not even paying any attention to the story. By contrast, with Final Fantasy VII, I'm just like, can I please just mainline the story? I don't care about the side content.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I guess it remains to be seen what I will feel like later on in the game. I feel like chapter 9 and 10 have just been like super long and drawn out, such that I feel like my progress is like wading through quicksand. It's just like, I need to get through this and to the next chapter so I can start doing some other stuff. But I'm really curious as to where the story is going. So I mean, it's got me hooked on that level, but also like dreading some more of that side content. So I'm in a weird area with it, but I need to get back to it so that I can actually finish it and we can talk it out. but
mm-hmm.
Anyway, do you have any parting wisdom?
You know, Zach, I had one prepared that it was going to be food related, but in talking today, my parting wisdom is to check out What the Golf. It's available on Switch and I think on everywhere, but I played it on Switch. It is a great little game, great to play with friends. It's like a good party game. It's not necessarily multiplayer, but you can like hand the game, the like controller off to people. It's constantly surprising, constantly very fun. There's not really any roadblocks. There's only a couple levels where I had trouble, but probably the best. I mean, it's not. I hesitate to call it a sports game because it does get pretty insane. But because that What the Car is coming out, I feel like it's a great time to check out What the Golf on any platform. It may even be on Android. I don't know.
I will look into that for sure. What the Golf. On that note, go ahead and follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Starside Cafe, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.